Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
We are live at Atlanta United's training grounds, guys. It was the media game today, and I am seriously consoling Abe Gordon as we speak. He gave up 4 goals today. I am just trying to lift his spirits. I would suggest you tweet at him and tell him it's going to be okay. We are Dukes and Bell. Abe's in for Mike today. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey man, it is good to have you guys listening on a Friday. Lots of stuff going on. By the way, before we get into Falcons, what do you think of Steve Koonin saying what he said in regards to this this position? Listen, a lot of names out there. The Danny Ferry thing, as I said, I don't know if he's interviewed or he's going to be interviewed. What I do know is he is on the list, and Steve Koonin would not confirm that, but I do not think, as I said, he's going to end up getting this job. He's been out of basically a general manager spot for about 10 years. He's been in and around basketball. But I know that some people still remember what happened here early 2013, 2014, I think it was, somewhere around there, when he got hired. And then right after, you know, this incident happened where he was talking about Luol Deng. Either way, what'd you think? Do you believe Steve as far as the timetable you asked him about?
Yeah, and I do think it makes sense. I mean, you're not going into this blind without a GM. You have a GM, and that's that guy's job. I also found it fascinating he used the term deep experience when referring to this position, and not necessarily clarified. That doesn't mean he's already run a team before, but I found the term deep experience to be fascinating, and it shows they're going to get a guy that's familiar with the league, and it to me, it's just still interesting what the power structure is going to be, because we can collaborate all we want, Carl.
Yeah.
But Quinn might want one thing. Antti Salo might want something else. And the new executive might say, we're not doing either of those. It's just a fascinating power structure as to how you build the team and who gets final say.
Well, we're going to wait to see where that goes. Abe, you have a concern as we get into the 5 o'clock hour. By the way, the 4 o'clock hour was brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Guys, get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. And when we talk about the Falcons, listen, we have talked a lot about the draft. If you missed Rick Stroud earlier today talking about Tampa Bay, he was excellent in breaking down what the Bucs did in their draft, why they did it, and even talking about their new offensive coordinator, who seems to be a savant, apparently, well-educated, but a guy who's been a grinder in the NFL, taking over for Liam Cohen, who's now down in Jacksonville. But what's this concern of yours when we talk about the Falcons?
Yeah, I mean – Drake London had his fifth-year option picked up, and I was hopeful, and I still am, don't get me wrong. They took it kind of pretty close to the deadline, you know, within 24 hours of the deadline or whatever it was. And I was hopeful that they were just working towards an extension. And now, picking up the fifth-year option, $16.8 million or somewhere in that range, and he gets a fifth year, and it gives you some time to work towards an extension. What is that extension going to look like, assuming there actually is one at some point? Because if I'm Drake London, I'm playing some real hardball about what's going on. This is a guy that was fourth in the NFL in yards a year ago, ninth in receptions, ninth in touchdowns, with a massive drop-off in quarterback for a five-week stretch in the middle of the season. If that doesn't happen, it's probably top seven, top five in all of those categories, and you start to think, what is an extension going to look like if you can get one with Drake London? Look, he's not Jamar Chase at $40.25 million annually.
Okay.
I don't know how far off he's going to be, though. And are you prepared to take this to $32, $34 million annually for Drake London? Because look, here's the list of receivers that are making $30 million or more per year. Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, and tell me where you think Drake London starts to fit into that discussion. Okay. CeeDee Lamb, DK Metcalf, AJ
who just got traded from Seattle,
right? AJ Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyreek Hill, and Brandon Ayuk. Those are the ones who make 30 or more million. The next two, as part of the top 10 highest paid wide receivers, T. Higgins and Jaylen Waddle.
Drake London is going to be a $30 million guy.
There's no way around it.
He's going to be a
$30 million
guy.
There's no way around it.
And to your point about, is he on the high end of that? Is he going to be, you know, top two? I can't speak to that because he could put up amazing numbers this year with Michael Penix and turn right back around in that fifth year. And if the Falcons are smart, if they project this, they would go ahead and do this extension earlier than later.
And that's what I was hoping was before they picked up the option.
Because,
they had to.
Yes, because the longer you wait and ask, all you got to do is ask Jamar Chase this. The more expensive it gets.
And they have – here's the thing that's fascinating to me. They have no leverage. The Atlanta Falcons have zero leverage.
When it comes to Drake?
Yeah. They don't have a first-round pick next year. You traded that to get James Pierce. You're not drafting a replacement next year. You have no leverage. He's your number one. There's no guy like in San Francisco, like in Cincinnati, where you look at it and say, if we move on, we got another guy that's right. There's no one there. It's just Drake. You can't afford to let him go. There is no sign it for $27 million. If not, we'll pass on you. We'll draft a first-round receiver, and we'll move on. There's none of that. He's your plan. And I think he's aware of that. And I think $30 million is the starting point.
No doubt. He's going to be that. Here's the reason why I think this is a great problem to have. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. In a few years, let's hope that we're having to have these hard decisions, not only about Drake, but about a guy named Bijan Robinson, and that Michael Penix has shown you enough that all of a sudden we're having those conversations about what he's potentially going to get as one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. If all of that happens, Falcon fans, then that means we're one of the best teams in the league.
Well, let's
that means we are doing exactly what we should be doing.
Let's parlay it to another team having this issue.
And competing for Super Bowls.
The San Francisco 49ers have paid Christian McCaffrey a gajillion dollars. They have paid Deebo Samuel a gajillion dollars. That's Brandon Ayuk. They just paid George Kittle a gajillion dollars. And now they're sitting here having to make the decision about their Michael Penix, Brock Purdy, about is this guy a $50 million quarterback? I would love to be in that situation with all of these guys.
Well, look, I think this is fair and versus you know, what you think you should be getting are two different things. I think the Giants a couple of years ago, what Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones was not a high-end $50 million quarterback, but he got $40 million. And I thought the deal what the Giants offered him. Of course, he accepted it. We know they've parted ways, and now Daniel Jones is going to be competing for a spot to be the starting quarterback in Indianapolis. But to me, Abe, this is a good problem to have. We should be talking about the guys we've drafted turning into top players and paying them top dollar. If we were talking about the opposite, it means we got it wrong. We didn't get the right wide receiver or the right running back or the right quarterback. And I'm just hoping in a few years this is the discussion we're having. The Drake London thing that you're bringing up is interesting because of the quandary that the Falcons are in.
It's a good problem to have if you get him to sign.
But I also
think the alternative is
what?
He plays a contract year. Sets the world on fire.
And then becomes too expensive for you?
You don't, right? Yeah.
Potentially. potentially. That could happen. But I also think that the Falcons understand. And by the way, you can't keep everybody. I mean, look, we're not to that point yet. But when Abe said this to me earlier, and I was like, okay. I think Drake London is a dog, and I think eventually
I love Drake London.
Yes, and I think he's going to be a $35 million wide receiver. And that's not me projecting, guys. That's the going rate of these guys.
The realistic situation is he's going to be paid like a top 10 quarterback.
He is.
Whether it's here or somewhere else is a question.
Wide receiver.
Excuse me, yes. Wide receiver. Yes. But the other concern for me is just the Falcons. Like I said, there's no leverage there. There is no threat of we'll draft your replacement in the first round.
Yeah.
That went out the door with James Pierce coming in.
The way I look at this, too, is you guys look at a guy like Darnell Mooney. What's up, Darnell? Who comes in and produces last year.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of guys you're going to have to supplement around Drake.
There's got to be value impact.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of players where I don't believe that the Falcons are interested in paying both of their wide receivers $30 or $45 million when you know down the road if he's as good as we think, as good as I think, Michael Penix is going to be getting that money. Bijan's going to be getting that money. At some point, you're going to pay some of your offensive linemen who should be, you know, again, a Chris Lindstrom who's already gotten a deal. What's another Chris Lindstrom deal look like if he's one of the top
Not that far off for Bergeron. That's
my point. Yeah. So these are tough decisions, but I love it. This is where we should be living.
It's a better problem to have than you thought because there were people as recently as last year that said Drake London's not a one.
No, they're crazy.
A one.
He's absolutely a one.
Yeah.
And I think, too, the missing piece to all of this, and it would make Drake better, it would make Darnell better, it would make Michael Penix better, is the Kyle Pitts piece. If Kyle Pitts was able to produce, and I'm just simply talking about numbers. I'm not even talking about all the other stuff we've discussed. Putting up numbers consistently, week in and week out, how much better would this offense be? How much more dangerous would it be? How much more would that open up opportunities? If I'm a DB, what I'm doing, I know we're going to Drake. I am not letting Drake London beat me. That's how I look at this team right now. There's nobody else, right? When you talk about who scares you,
yeah.
Drake London is the guy I know that the Falcons are going to go to consistently. And I think that would change if Pitts lived up to it. Certainly Darnell Mooney was playing his butt off last year, and then Kirk Cousins went down and, well, his numbers got reduced. It's an interesting thing to look at. What is Drake London's extension going to look like? I hope we're talking about this down the road. Hey, we're coming back around the yard with Grant McCauley. Dodgers in town, guys. It is a big series. Remember, we started these guys. They swept us, and then we went 7 to start the year. Maybe it's time for a little payback at home. Dodgers tonight. We'll talk to Grant next.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Series at Truist Park. It's Stukes and Bell. Abe is in for Mike today, and let's talk to our buddy Grant McCauley as we go around the yard. Grant, this series is going to be intriguing in many ways. Obviously, the Dodgers are the standard. I think they're tied with the Mets for the most wins in the major leagues. But I think, you know, the way the season started, right, with us playing the Dodgers, and then we go 0-7, and we know we're 5-13 at one point. This is like, okay, we've kind of worked our way back now, and we feel a lot better about our team. What are you expecting this weekend between these two teams?
Yeah, I think it should look different. It certainly feels different, doesn't it, than last these two teams met about a month ago, where it seemed like, hey, maybe the Dodgers will never lose a game, and will the Braves ever win a game? But obviously that's why they play 162 of these things. And talking to some of the guys before this one, nobody's trying to put too much pressure on atoning for one particular previous series, but they're definitely focused on winning this series and making the most of this homestand, where the Braves have played fairly well at home. They're 8-3 this year, but they have played the second fewest home games of any team in the major leagues thus far. So this nice little 7-game trip, it's going to be challenging, or the 7-game stay, I should say, will be challenging, but you know, it's, I think that you've seen the Braves offensively start to come to life. They have been making plays. They have been doing the things that they need to win consistently with four straight series wins coming in. It's all trending in the right direction, but we know what it means when these two teams match up. It just feels a little bit different, and I'm sure that's not lost on the Braves.
Grant, we got our first little update about Spencer Strider today. I know they said he's playing catch, but they didn't provide a timeline. I guess the question I have is he expected when he is ready to come back? Does he go right back into the rotation, or are they looking at a rehab start? Or do you know from that aspect what the plan might be?
No, I don't think they know yet. And, yeah, we did ask about that prior to the game, and there really wasn't any specifics beyond the fact that you can see Spencer Strider is here and he is playing catch. And he does seem to be moving around fine, but there's a big difference in some of the little everyday things and getting back on a mound, going max effort. And, of course, Spencer Strider, you may have noticed, is a lower body kind of guy. So he's, I think, frustrated by this is probably the nice way to put it, but can't rush it. And the Braves are very much in the I think, camp of never trying to rush an injury, especially at this point in the season and for somebody who works so hard to get back. So, unfortunately, there's just not a lot of specifics there. The longer the time goes, though, Abe, if he's gone longer than the 2 weeks or so that he's on this injured list stint and it starts to just kind of linger past that, I think you almost have to either figure out a simulated game situation where he's going to throw, 65, 75 pitches, I would imagine, in the bullpen, wherever that's home, road, or otherwise. And then I think you almost have to send him out and get at least one more start because he had finally ramped himself back up between the spring outings and the three that he had in the minor leagues, and then, of course, that first one in Toronto where it looked like, hey, he's right around 100 pitches. That's where you need him to be, and that's not going to happen overnight, I don't think, after sitting around for 3 weeks.
Grant, as we talk about Braves-Dodgers, and make sure you check your local listings as far as how to watch this series. It's going to kind of be all over the place this weekend. Let's talk about the lineup and how you approach this because Yamamoto, I think we're seeing both him and Suzuki. Is that right this weekend? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, Sasaki will pitch the second game, I believe.
Yes, Sasaki, excuse me. And I think Yamamoto's been a guy that's given you at least, five-plus innings in every outing so far this season?
Yeah, and he's looked great this year. He's among the better pitchers in all of baseball. So this is exactly what the Dodgers signed up for when they gave him that huge contract a year ago. I think he showed it at times last year, but it seems like he's really built on that this season. So you can plan on it being pretty tough just based on his arsenal and the fact he gets a lot of swing and miss. You just want to try to keep this game manageable. I think that's the number one job, obviously, for Grant Holmes, who we can probably get into later, starting once again against the Dodgers, the team that drafted him some 10 years ago. And here he is facing them, his old team, I guess the team he never really got to play for in the big leagues, but his first club anyway. That's got to be kind of special, even though Dodger Stadium had to be a pretty special outing for him prior to this. But long story short, I think that it's going to be, if you line it up and look at the starting pitching matchups, the Dodgers may seem more favorable on paper. Braves obviously used Chris Sale in that finale against the Colorado Rockies, so you don't have that bullet to fire. But they've got Spencer Schwellenbach in the second game, and we'll see in game three if Bryce Elder can build off of what we've seen the last couple of starts.
A couple of guys I want to ask you about that maybe we thought would be in a platoon situation. It feels like they're just now everyday starters, Eli White and Nick Allen. Is that the case? Are we still platooning those guys? Or are they just locked in right now for the most part?
I mean, I don't think there's anything resembling a platoon at shortstop right now. I think Allen has started all but one of the last, 2 weeks' worth of games. Meanwhile, Eli White has started in seven straight games. And Brian Snitker talked a little bit about that prior to the game as well and his availability and was like, okay, well, has Eli just kind of shown you that this is the role? And he said, well, he's playing great right now, and we're going to give him this opportunity and see what happens. You know, it's as we're all well aware, the season is very long, and there are highs and there are lows. But I think you kind of owe it to yourself if you're the Braves and you were looking for a spark or looking for answers or just trying to find some consistency, for crying out loud, in a couple of spots. You're getting it with those two guys, and they may not have been on the manifest, if you will, in spring training as the expected starters at a couple of spots. But I think the Braves are pretty fortunate and pretty happy that they have. And I think Allen's been extremely impressive with the way that he plays shortstop, with the way that he approaches the game in general. It's just kind of refreshing to have those kind of tough, scrappy players that you can just throw out there in the lineup. And I think that's good energy for the club, and that stuff matters too.
Concerned about Ozzie or not at all?
Not really. I mean, again, the highs, the lows of a long season. I know if you live on social media, which unfortunately I do rent a place, it's kind of tough sometimes to see some of the feedback of, oh, well, Ozzy as a switch hitter is a failed experiment. You go look up his numbers and tell me that's a failure, because I know 29 other teams that would sign up to have that quote-unquote problem at second base for the last 7 or 8 years. He has certainly been going through it, but I think with Ozzy, who is still pretty young, I know that the arm is obviously not there. That's something that's probably not going to change, but he's still a decent second baseman range-wise. He's just going to have to find ways, I think, to compensate for that. But if he's hitting, I don't know that anybody really cares about all that stuff. So you just got to find some consistency. He's always been kind of a go-down-and-get-it golf-type swing, but his launch angle this year has been, I think, the lowest, the worst that it's been in the last 3 seasons. And that's leading to a lot more pop-ups, a lot more unproductive outs. And then, of course, you've got the penchant for swinging early in counts and not really working at bats. And I don't know if the Leopard's going to change his spots there either, but he is who he is. And when he gets going, he can make you forget about times like this. I think for him, for Braves, and probably for Braves fans, they just like that get going part to happen sooner than later.
I know we talked about this series and not putting too much pressure on you and trying to get some get back from what happened in Los Angeles. But at some level, are we viewing this series as a landscape of how much has truly changed since that 0-7 start?
No, I think that, I mean, if it all goes wrong, then yeah, it'll be fair to question, okay, well, what in the world has happened here? Did the Braves really figure it out, or are they going to be able to challenge a club like this? But I think that, you know, the Dodgers are a team that has been extremely good at home, where they're 15-3. They're 6-7 on the road. They've had their own problems, but you know these games are going to be competitive. And obviously the first meeting between these two teams is going to leave a bad taste in your mouth if you're the Braves. And, you know, Michael Harris said, look, we know we got swept out there, but we can't just think about that. We got to go out there and have the same approach we've had the last 4 series, all of them, and come out and try to, you know, get that series win here. You might lose a game. They're the Dodgers. They're pretty good. They've got a nice club, and clearly they've got their eyes on October, as do the Braves. But I don't think you can really put too much on any one series over the course of the regular season. This is a long marathon of games. Some of them are going to go your way. Some of them aren't. But I think that the Braves have done a pretty good job over the last few years. It's cliche, tiresome as it might be to hear from some, just not getting too high or too low over the course of the year, and I think that serves them well.
Yeah, I mean, speaking about that, but everybody thought the Dodgers were going to run away with this. It was cheating and, you know, oh, they spin like nobody else. It's okay, right? I mean, they haven't done any of those things. I don't think, Grant, they're going to win 150 games, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they're a very good club, but all that stuff that everybody was screaming before the season, you know, we can relax a little bit.
No, I mean, you still got to go out there and play the games. And I know this is an old thing from when I started my first year on the Braves, you know, beat, if you want to call it that, or at least being around the club, was 2005. And Bobby Cox was the manager then. And I remember him saying a couple of things. Win 2 out of 3, you're going to be in a pretty good spot if you do that all year long. Secondly, which is basically the same math, you're going to win 54, you're going to lose 54. It's what happens in the other 54 that's going to tell the tale of your season. The Dodgers fall in that boat as well. There's a very good chance they could win that other 54. They are that good. We've seen it. We know what they have, and they're not even at full strength right now, so that should be kind of scary as well. But even looking at the National League West, they've been in a timeshare for first place with the San Diego Padres and the San Francisco Giants of all teams. So they're not even really running away with their own division, even when they have been able to climb up to the top. So you play all these games for a reason. We'll see how it all plays out ultimately, but you expect the Dodgers to be one of those teams that's there standing when the smoke settles and dust clears at the end of this regular season, trying to do something special. The Braves just want to make sure they punch their ticket to do the exact same thing.
It's going to be a fun weekend. Grant, when are you on this weekend, by the way?
I will be on Sunday at 5 p.m. We'll be going over, obviously, a very big weekend series here. We'll take a look around all the rest of baseball. And if you want to subscribe, you can find From the Diamond wherever you get your podcast and, of course, on the Odyssey app.
Awesome. Thanks so much. We will talk soon. Enjoy the series, brother.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, that's Grant McCauley. Coming up, guys, we'll get you caught up on the latest of what's been going on in the world of sports. One of the all-time greats is done. We'll tell you about it coming up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. stories that we need to talk about here before 6 o'clock. It's Dukes and Bell. Abe's in for Mike today, and Mike's down at the F1 race down in Miami, so he'll be posting a lot of stuff down there from the weekend. It's funny, Abe, because we had a great conversation yesterday about Bill Belichick and his girlfriend. What's her name? Jordan Hudson, I think her name
is.
And I had a guy hit me up. Who cares about this, man? I mean, Belichick. And I just literally pull up ESPN, and Gordon is our on-site engineer, and the title of this piece here is called Let's All Settle Down About Belichick's Girlfriend. And it just made me laugh because my response to him was, everybody cares, because it's so uncharacteristic of Belichick to be behaving the way that he is and allowing someone to control a situation. I think people just want to know what's going on. And by the way, it wouldn't be a big deal if Bill Belichick's life was like Kim Kardashian. If you knew everything that was going on, you wouldn't care. The fact that he's not let you into anything, you're kind of like, what's happening here? So it is fascinating. But now, yeah, I think our buddy Dan Wetzel wrote this story. Let's all calm down. Either way, man, I want to mention Greg Popovich stepping down as the Spurs coach. Mitch Johnson has been named the he was an interim coach when Pop was out this year, and now he's been named the head coach. But they did make that official earlier in the show. I was not sure. I had heard that, but I didn't know if it was official. It is. But Greg Popovich, one of the all-time great coaches in the history of the NBA. Five-time champion. He coached some of the greatest players. Again, sort of like Phil Jackson, where people can say, well, he had Tim Duncan. He had Ginobili. He had Parker. Yeah, but you had to manage it. You still had to win. And then they went out and supplemented the stars with great pieces. Robert Horry was a part of those championships. You know, I mean, like Steven Jackson played on those teams. Like, they had a bunch of guys that came and went, but the core group was there. But Pop is stepping away. He had a stroke, for those who don't remember, last year, 24, stepped away, but he is now going to transition to a full-time role as the team's president of basketball operations.
Yeah, I think he's going to go down as people talk about coaches with multiple championships, stuff like that. And you mentioned Phil Jackson. I find that an interesting comparison because when you look at Phil, you say he had Jordan, he had Kobe. When you look at Greg Popovich, you felt like every title they've won was a team effort.
Yes.
And it wasn't – not that they didn't have great players, right? Kawhi was a great player, and you mentioned Duncan and Robinson, stuff like that, too.
Well, when they beat the Heat, I'm glad you brought this up. Kawhi is a rookie on that team. He's guarding LeBron. Nobody even knew who Kawhi Leonard was.
It just felt like it was such an organizational championship.
Yeah.
And he was the head of that organization, as opposed to, all right, you got LeBron, we're going to the finals, you know, and we got some other great players too, or same with Jordan. They did it a little bit different. You just don't see it put together that way often. You look at some of the teams now that are maybe in the discussion for best team in the NBA. You look at OKC, it's going to kind of feel a little bit similar. This is going to feel like if they can win it all. But they've got SGA, and he is the MVP and one of the two or three best players in the league. Duncan was outstanding. How many years would we have said he was the number two or three best player in the league, though?
Most of his career.
You think so? I don't think so.
Yes. Duncan is the best power forward to ever play in the NBA.
I know, but I'm not talking about in his position. I'm talking about in the league. He was never number one.
No, but I think that was because his game was boring.
No, I get that too. Don't get me wrong. Duncan is,
as Shaq says, you know, the big fundamental. I mean, he was so surgical with the way he did his offense. I mean, like, you think about it now, right? The off the glass, the touch, he had every move in the post that you could imagine.
He's also the only guy in the league that did it that way, so defenders never. They just didn't adjust to defending Duncan.
Yeah,
I found it. His career, his on-court career was fascinating.
But no flash. And
no.
That's just not who he was. And so I think if he was that flashy guy, he probably get
maybe
more recognition.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think Tim Duncan, when you talk about like in years where he should have been maybe the MVP or either the second best player in the league, I could 10 out of whatever how many years he played. He was that dominant.
But he was, and I agree. But his whole career was covered by Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, right?
Yes.
Like there was no gaps there.
End of Jordan, yep. Kobe, Shaq, yes.
He was never the best player, as viewed by,
agreed.
You know what I mean?
Agreed.
And you could probably start to argue, when did Shaq come in? He was probably never viewed necessarily as better than Shaq at times in dominant seasons. And you look around, he just wasn't necessarily viewed that guy. But the performance in that whole team, by the way, it just the role players who would not have been Hall of Famers elsewhere, they just wouldn't have been. Like Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, they're not Hall of Famers if they're not in San Antonio under Pop. They're just not.
I agree with that. Also, we forget he hired Becky Hammond.
Yep.
Which was a monumental move. She is the coach of the Las Vegas Aces, but she spent 7 seasons as an assistant under Pop and really opened the door for a lot of women in those ranks to make their way into the NBA. And I think, you know, if she wants to, Becky Hammond can probably be a coach of the NBA if she wanted to at some point. But that's another legacy moment for Pop. Either way, he's stepping away 29 years. Wimby wrote a nice piece on social media talking about 29 years, thanking him for his wisdom. And you said real quick as we wrap this up, the Spurs are an attractive team. Like, Mitch Johnson's getting a team. How far are they away from competing? Now, the West is a beast, but how far are they away from competing?
Well, you say it's a beast, right? The Lakers are the 3 seed, but that changes within 2 years. LeBron will retire at some point. I just feel like it's probably not next year.
You don't believe
year.
In soft body Luka, huh?
I love Luka, but they're not the 3 seed in 2 years.
Okay.
Or whenever LeBron retires, I don't know if the Golden State is falling apart. Not right now, but I mean,
well, the run is
there's going to be changes.
Yeah.
There's going to be changes. Yeah. Clippers are competitive, but they're old too. It seems like OKC. It seems like the Rockets, some of these young cores that are going to be there. You've got a guy that is potentially one of the top 5, if not top 3 or top 1 best players in the NBA in Wemby. Obviously, he's got to stay healthy and coming off the injury, but you've got that piece. Central, you've got an all-star point guard central, and now you've got an up-and-coming rising star in Stephon Castle, just beat out Reza Schaefer, rookie of the year. You've got 3 pieces. And I'll say young. I know De'Aaron Fox isn't a spring chicken anymore, but he's not that old either. You've got 3 central pieces you can build around for a decade. It's an attractive gig.
It is. There's no doubt. Braves and Dodgers tonight, starting a series this weekend over at Truist Park. You wanted to ask me about the horses, the ponies. Let's do it, man.
Yeah, Kentucky Derby's on Saturday, and you know me. I watch everything. I'll watch the race, but I'm having a tough time feeling like it's a big deal this year.
What?
And it's not just this year.
The 151st running of the Kentucky Derby is not a big deal?
Is it?
It is.
Is it?
It is always a big deal.
You've been invited to a derby party this year?
I have one at my house.
Thanks for the invite, bro.
Well, I mean, I say that.
Come on, man.
Yes, yes. Well, you asked. I'm just saying. Yes, of course.
I don't know, man. I just don't feel like it's getting talked about. It kind of sneaks up every year.
It
right?
does.
And,
it
and
does.
It just doesn't feel like a big deal to me this year.
I'll say this.
And it's been trending, by the way, it's not just this year. It's been trending in this direction for a number of years.
I think it is a big deal. It should be on, if you're a sports fan, on your bucket list, just to go experience it one time. We were up at Churchill Downs in the fall. My wife and I were up there. We went up and won a couple of bucks. Just going on, it was like a random Thursday night, and it was fun. And we've been multiple times. The point is, the Run for the Roses is still a big deal. I just think because of the controversy maybe with some of the horses, the trainers, has that taken away from the nostalgia of what this race is? I don't know. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, the best, as they say, the best 2 minutes in sports, right? I mean,
yeah, and I don't think I've changed as a sports fan.
I'm going to watch.
I'm going to watch too, but I feel like I know like 2 horses coming in. I feel like in other years I've known 6 horses.
Okay, but isn't that every year? I mean, like, honestly, I'm sitting here as you speak and I'm looking at the odds of some of these horses, and the one that's the most compelling, or at least they're saying, and again, I don't bet horses all the time. It's the Kentucky Derby's the one time that I go, all right.
Yeah.
And by the way, my partner, got to give him props, man. Mike and I have been out in Las Vegas during this race, and he has been like, let's bet on the horses. And I'm like, And this dude has hit monster money and killed it. But this Luxor Cafe has 15-1 odds. And the reason why this is a horse that they're talking about, because I think it has lineage to one of the horses that won this race a few years back. And I'm just – oh, there it is. The Son of American Pharaoh. So this horse, Luxor Cafe, is the son of 2015 Triple Crown winner American Pharoah. So they're talking about this horse a lot, and that's why it's getting a lot of, you know, this horse is getting a lot of love. It had strong finishes in Japan. But I'm with you. I hear what you're saying. I just think every year I don't watch horse racing enough, but I will watch the Kentucky Derby because it is the biggest event.
I think it's a big deal when Saturday at when does it go off? 6:50 or
seven.
Whatever it is.
So, yeah, I think
Saturday when it comes on, I think it's a big deal for those moments. The Super Bowl like pregame show that they run out there.
Oh, it's nuts.
For 9 hours.
It is.
You will get me watching 3 minutes of coverage.
Yeah.
Maybe 30 seconds pre race, the race, and 30
seconds.
And that
is weird for somebody who.
I'm just out.
It's weird for somebody who loves to watch this kind of stuff. I mean, like, you love. Abe literally had on some kind of street fighting from Japan.
It was karate combat. They were in Abu Dhabi.
Okay, exactly.
I'm going to watch one FC later tonight.
You had this on during the show, and you're telling me you won't watch the pre-game
I can't do
of the Kentucky Derby.
The pre for the Derby.
You watch the weirdest stuff.
I know, but here's the thing. I want the sport. I don't care about your fluff piece. I don't care about your heartbreaking story.
Okay.
I don't care about any of that.
All right.
I want the event.
Well, you're gonna
watch any Super Bowl pregame.
You're gonna get it on Saturday. You will watch it though.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
oh yeah.
I love it. I love the fact that the hype surrounding the horses, and then when it happens, and there's always a letdown too. I mean, that's the thing. You know, they'll hype two of these horses or three of these horses up, and it never happens the way you expect. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're out here at Atlanta United, the training grounds. Real quick before we wrap up, we're going to hand things over to Turtle. Turtle's coming up at 6.
Yeah.
Make sure you stay here. Today was the media game. How
yes.
would you assess it?
First off, I think importantly, no one got any serious knocks.
That's
no
true.
Serious injuries.
That's true.
It's always like a real concern for people who are out of shape, up in age.
That's true.
No one had to be carted off. No dry, none of the magic spray ice stuff. So that's good. Well played match. It went to the final moments and ended up in a penalty shootout. Even the penalty shootout was tied after the first five takers. And so it went to sudden death PKs. So really fun. Team Resurgence came out ahead over Team Connector.
You were on Team Connectors.
I was on
okay.
Team Connectors.
All right.
Still frustrated with the second half performance of my squad. Something we're going to have to address and work on. It's kind of like J.J.
Well,
Redick said.
Yeah, but
there's some
off-season
fitness that needs to be addressed. We need to be ready to play that second 30 minutes.
Are you know? Saying there were some people who weren't ready for the second half on your team and that they were out of shape?
Well, look, we take a 4-1 at one point, and it felt like a lot of people were celebrating way too early. And from that point forward, they had guys who kept focus,
okay.
stayed in the game, and we lost our focus, and
that's what happened.
Had to take it to shoot. I mean, we were lucky to get it to PKs. I was out there killing as much time as I could.
But they came back and won.
Well, after they came back, I was still worried. It was like 3 minutes left. I'm like, these bums on my defense ain't going to hold for 3 minutes.
All right. You were in goal today, though, right?
I was, yeah. I played well.
Is that how you stated?
Look – at my level of performance, Carl, at my level of performance, the only job you have in goal is make one or two saves you maybe shouldn't, and no goals get in that definitely should not be in.
They scored 4.
Yeah. They were cracked. They were great shots. You have to give credit to the opposing team.
You know what? Hey, make sure you keep this day-to-day for future reference.
They know.
Okay.
They know. They had to bring out stuff. I don't know if Goose was making a save on one of those.
Oh, stop
on one
it.
Of them. On stop one of them. On
we,
one of them.
We, you know what? Enough. We got to get out of here.
Two.
We
got to
get out of here.
Two.
Let's clear our throats, Day-Day. I have never seen a teammate throw his people under the bus like Abe today. Earlier today, he said, I was the only one giving 100% on my team. Then he comes back later in the show and basically says, these people were out of shape. Unbelievable. Hey, Day-Day, back in the studio, man. Great work. I know O was off today. O, congratulations, and we're looking forward. Him and his wife, they're counting down to the new baby, man. So big shout-out to O. Mike is down in Miami. He'll be back on Monday. Lots of stories and lots of fun. Make sure you're here at 2 o'clock. And, Abe, thank you for filling in, man. Appreciate you.
I'm happy to be here, man. It was really fun, and look forward to doing it more, hopefully next time with both calf muscles working.
goodness. Gordon, G-Money, thank you for being our on-site engineer. All right, stay right there. Turtles got you squared away. Big weekend, and we're back talking about it with you 2 o'clock on Monday. All right, Abe, clear your throat.
Yeah, look, it's a big series for the Braves, and I know Grant said you don't put too much into one result, but you already got embarrassed playing the Dodgers once. You are now back at home. It cannot happen again. It's not your ideal pitching matchups overall. No Sale, no Strider going against these guys. Got to find a way to make it respectable at home.
No doubt about it. Hey, I don't know if they win or lose tonight. What I do know is the perception of him being a dirty player, and I'm talking about Dylan Brooks, has just been enhanced. When asked about it a few days ago, if he was intentionally trying to hurt Steph Curry's thumb, who he's been dealing with a thumb injury, he said, yeah, anything goes. Look, even if I was playing that way, I wouldn't be dumb enough to tell you. Tonight, the referees should be looking out for Dylan Brooks and his cheap shots. We'll see if it makes a difference as Golden State tries to finish this thing. Hey, enjoy the weekend, everybody. If you love the show,
you tell your friends.
If you don't,
you're playing goalie in next year's media match.